You can call 479-7491 during the program. Moderating tonight's forum is the head of the Journalism Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, B.G. Olson.
Good evening. Welcome to Town Forum. It's a pleasure this evening to introduce our guests for this special program. First on my left, J.S. Hammond, Governor of the State of Alaska. And members of the Governor's Cabinet, Richard Burton, Commissioner of Public Safety. Andy Warwick, Commissioner of Administration. L.A. Tony Motley, Commissioner of Commerce. Avram Gross, Attorney General. Lee McInerney, Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs. Guy Martin, Commissioner of Natural Resources. And Ernst Moeller, Commissioner of Environmental Conservation. Welcome to Fairbanks and welcome to Town Forum. Thank you. Now, after a preliminary discussion and a special announcement by the Governor, Governor Hammond and the members of his cabinet here tonight will accept your phone calls. They will answer questions directly or discuss issues that might concern you. You may talk to them directly if you like, or if you would rather, you may give your questions to the telephone operator and they will be relayed to the proper person. Now remember this phone number, 479-7491. We'll be repeating it for you often. 479-7491. Also, we have several questions gathered from citizens in the community as people from KUAC TV roamed around the past few days. So from time to time, if appropriate, or if the phone calls lag a bit, we might try a few of these questions. One thing I'd like to mention, if you do wish to speak directly to the Governor or one of the other members of the Cabinet present tonight, we will appreciate you identifying yourself. If you prefer just to give the question for me to read and direct to the proper person, it's not necessary to identify yourself. Governor, you've had a back problem. How are you feeling?
Oh, fine. Thank you.
Well, we'll do our best tonight to take some weight from your shoulders and try not to add any more burdens to them. I understand, Governor, that before we start our discussion with our viewers, that you have a very special announcement you'd like to make. So we'd like to do it this time.
Yes, thank you. A couple of them, as a matter of fact. First, I'd like to express my appreciation for the warm and friendly hospitality of the people of Fairbanks. It's certainly been much appreciated. I think a very rewarding trip from both the Governor's office perspective and certainly, hopefully, from that of the citizen who, incapable of coming, Juneau, for one reason or another, has had a chance to meet with us and discuss some problems of a pressing nature in their view. I particularly want to thank you for turning on the good weather, although it did somehow cause a little trauma in regard to my backbone. Perhaps we too quickly dried out those waterlogged southeastern bones of mine, but it's been a very enjoyable trip and I'm pleased to be here. But on a more serious note, I'd like to make an announcement that I think is of crucial concern to all the citizens of the Fairbanks area and certainly the citizens of the state. Most of you are probably aware that the criminal justice system in the Fairbanks area has been under severe stress for some time. By criminal justice, I mean everything connected with the enforcement of the criminal law, from the maintenance of security and order on the streets to the processing of cases through the courts. The court calendar in Fairbanks is vastly overcrowded with major criminal cases. Courts are falling behind, and there's a risk that criminal defendants might go free simply because of lack of resources to try them. The judges in Fairbanks have been working hard, but in spite of those efforts, they are hard-pressed to keep up with the enormous pressure of criminal cases. I've also been advised by people in the Fairbanks area that the situation on the streets of Fairbanks has become serious, if not outright dangerous. Some news media have suggested that things were literally out of control. The community faces a crisis in law enforcement due to the fact that the slowdown of the pipeline is bringing large numbers of people into the city, and the police are simply becoming unable to contain the situation with existing resources. The environment of downtown Fairbanks has vividly changed lately, and in a way that I think most Fairbanksans do not appreciate. It appears to me that while some might quarrel about the functions of government in many instances, we could all agree that the basic function of government is to maintain security and order for its citizens. And that's exactly what we intend to do. I've taken several steps with which I want to acquaint you tonight. Hopefully, they'll alleviate the present crisis situation in the Fairbanks area and help this community through a difficult period. The basic problem lies in the tremendous increase in criminal cases. I've contacted the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court and have obtained from him a commitment to put extra Superior Court judges in the Fairbanks area for a period necessary to clean up the criminal calendar. Additional judges will arrive shortly in this community, and I've instructed the Attorney General to bring from other parts of the state additional prosecutors who can move the serious felony cases through the courts to speed up our justice system. The Public Defender Agency of my office has committed additional public defenders so that trials may proceed expeditiously. I wish to make special thanks in this regard to Chief Justice Bob Boutchever, who has spared no effort to get these judges to Fairbanks now. On the basis of reports of tremendously increased crime and statistics which seem to bear this out, I've asked the state troopers to make available additional troopers for patrol, not only on the area outside of Fairbanks, but of the area inside the city as well. There are additional troopers available for immediate temporary assignment to the city if that need arises. However, because I believe that the state should help communities only when the communities cannot help themselves, members of my administration have asked the Fairbanks Police Department whether that department needs any additional troopers in the downtown area. I've been advised by the Fairbanks Police Department that due to the increased crime in the downtown area, 5 additional city patrolmen are being added immediately. Chief Wolf advises me that it is his belief these additional patrolmen, coupled with a newly passed set of city ordinances designed to tighten up on loitering, prostitution, and liquor-related offenses, should bring the situation under control. But if it does not, he may call upon the state for the assignment of additional troopers I have mentioned. They'll be ready if he needs them, but it will be the judgment of your city government which will determine whether or not we specifically assign additional troopers to Fairbanks. That government apparently feels at the moment that with the addition of the local police, they can handle the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor. All right, we're ready for phone calls, and I notice we already have a phone call from Mr. John Newdorf. I'm going to push the right button here, I hope, Governor Hammond. We'll see who we'd like to talk to. Hello, this is Town Forum.
Hello, I'm speaking to Governor Hammond, please. This is Dutch Newdorf from North Pole. I work for the federal government. I have my own business, and I'm also a member of the City Council of North Pole. I'm not speaking for the city of North Pole now, but for his own private citizen. I don't know if you're aware, Governor, about our school situation. First of all, if I may, I'll give you a few facts and then ask for a solution, maybe. First of all, the last 2 years, our children have been bused to school to the city of Fairbanks, which is about 16 or 18 miles away at 40, 50, 60 below zero. We finally got our own high school out here in North Pole, which is something that we're very, very, very grateful for. But in the meantime, some things have arisen that I've been getting quite a few calls from as a council member. Number one, I have a son who is in the 8th grade. There are 52 students in that class. There are 35 desks. That means there's about 15 or 18 kids sitting on the floor. I have a very close friend of mine who has 50 students in a 9th grade class. Again, 35 desks, 15 kids sitting on the floor. In my son's class, 2 more children enrolled today. As you also know, Columbia Mobile Park is now moving trailers in the North Pole. We expect at least 500 within the next 8 months. Now, we have children coming here from Eielson Air Force Base, and I'm also getting the impression they're from Tananaw and also from Lathrop High School. We of North Pole like our school. We like our children. We don't want to bus them to town, but why do we have so many children from the outside area coming to our school when we still have over 500 trailers moving in town within the next 6 or 8 months, and our kids are sitting on the floor? Can you give me a solution, sir?
Well, of course, the solution would lie, it seems to me, with the resolution of the problem at the local level by the local school board. North Pole, I understand, is within the confines of the North Starth Borough, and of course they have local autonomy insofar as administration of the schools. The state's part, of course, is to furnish the funding, which we do for a major portion of the educational function, but Insofar as the particulars and the administration of the schools, that's a local issue that I would hope you would take up with your local school board members and borough assembly.
All right, sir. Can I ask you one question then, sir? Since you are still in town and you're affiliated with the state and, of course, with the school board, can I personally ask you to give an invitation to any school member board to be at our council meeting Monday night at 7:30 at the City Hall in North Pole to represent us or give us an answer? We would appreciate this very much. And like I say, I'm not talking for the council. I'm talking for people who have called, and I have gotten at least 25 phone calls in the last 2 weeks.
Do you have a school board member from the North Pole area?
No, sir, we don't.
Well, I think, again, that would be an appropriate petition to convey to the local school board to determine whether or not you cannot get representation on that board. But I didn't understand your question. You asked if I would solicit an invitation for whom to attend the council meeting?
Anyone on your school, I don't know if there's anybody in your panel right now that represents the school board, but I think you're aware of who our members are on the school board, and I would like to ask you if you could possibly get a hold of any one of the school board members to be at our council meeting this coming Monday night at 7:30 at North Pole at the City Hall.
Well, of course, your schools are administered by a local North Star Borough School Board, not under state jurisdiction. I don't know who the members of your local board are, but appropriately they should be contacted and requested to attend that meeting. I would hope that any in the sound of my voice would make a point of attending.
Thank you very much, Governor. I'm hoping this would happen. Thank you very much for your questions and answers. I certainly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Well, Governor Hammond, that's the first one. I don't see another light buzzing yet, so we have a question that was called in just a little bit earlier, addressed to Mr. Guy Martin. And before I read the question, Commissioner Martin, let me read that phone number one more time. It's 479-7491. If you want an opportunity to talk to the governor or any of the other members of the cabinet who are here tonight, please call that number. Mr. Martin, this question was called in by Janet Baird, member of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Farmers Co-op. And here's her question. Alaska Farmers Cooperative and Farmland have made a joint venture proposal for use of Alaska's royalty gas. However, no mention of this proposal has been included in public news stories. Please explain why and comment on whether the proposal is being considered.
Bob, I think Janet may not have seen it, but we have issued several public statements with regard to that offer. It's an offer about which I'm fairly enthusiastic. For some of the people that may not know, what it basically proposes to do is to buy some of our royalty gas and use it as the basis for a plant to make fertilizer for use in Alaska's agricultural industry. One of the problems is that a plant would have to be so large to be economic that it would make much more than we could use now in Alaska. So what we've done is gone back to the officials of Farmland International and their state partners and asked them to further define their offer. But the answer really is we're enthusiastic about it. It looks like a good idea, and it's one of the better proposals that's come to the Royalty Board.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Martin. Another question has just been handed to me that was called in. The way it reads, I think, is probably for you, Governor Hammond. It says, you have often mentioned you would control big labor. What are your plans or proposals for doing this? Now, perhaps it's for you or someone else on your
well,
thought. Maybe you'd like to get rid of this one. Huh?
I have often mentioned I would like to control big labor. The question is, how can it be done? My concerns are not specifically labor. I am somewhat dismayed by anything, be it overly large and powerful, big business, big government, or big labor. Unfortunately, in regard to constraints on virtually any of those three entities, the limitations on the state are significant. For example, there are federal statutes that virtually preclude, I understand, the imposition of antitrust or monopolistic constraints on big labor. And unless something were done at the federal level, there isn't a great deal that can be done in that regard at the state level. But I'd like to bounce that one off my Attorney General, who hopefully knows more about that than I do.
The federal law basically controls unions. One of the tremendous strengths of big labor in this state is the fact that they have enormous money. And the reason that they have enormous money is because they have enormous pension funds, which are used to invest, put deposits in banks, a whole host of things. But the control of those pension funds is exclusively under federal law. There's nothing the state can do about it. The only thing the state can do about it is to treat labor exactly like it treats everyone else, which means that it gets the same kind of equal treatment as far as our laws are concerned. They don't get any special breaks, and they don't get any worse treatment. They get treated just like any other citizen in the state, and that's what we've tried to do under this administration. But in terms of the law, there's very little, if any, state law that can be passed to deal with the union organizations themselves.
Incidentally, I have conveyed that initially to some representatives of big labor, that they'd be treated just exactly like anybody else, and it seemed to be less than satisfactory from their point of view. It makes one wonder what they had going for them before, but I mean it sincerely, and we've gotten, I think, improved relations with many of the unions throughout the state, and the recognition of the fact that we will treat them fairly and precisely on target with any other interest.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Now, we have another phone call on line one, and it's for Mr. Warwick, and the name of the gentleman calling is Peter Roy. I believe that's the way it's pronounced. Hello, this is Town Forum.
Yes, is Mr. Warwick there?
Yes, sir, he's listening.
Okay, Mr. Warwick, my name's Peter Roy.
Yes, sir.
And about July 1st of this year, I received a letter from Mr. Stewart, stating that that you were confirming a verbal commitment regarding me to Mr. Parr, Chip Parr of the Alaska Public Service, Local 71. And yes, this was a verbal commitment in stating me back to a B step in my job with the Highway Department. And as to this time, it has not been taken care of, and I was wanting to ask you if you could give me a reason why.
Well, the reason is, Mr. Roy, the reason is somewhat complex. Basically, without dwelling on it, Mr. Parr had contacted me in regard to it, and I indicated that there are other considerations to be taken, and one of the considerations was the Department of Highways attitude concerning it, and the Department of Highways did not feel that you might say placing you at step B rather than step A was an appropriate action, therefore it was not done. Now, as far as whether you should be at step A or step B, we do have procedures built into your contract to carry that through to a logical conclusion. As you know, in each contract the state has with the labor organizations, if the employee cannot resolve it to his satisfaction, he can go to an outside arbitrator, and the outside arbitrator will settle it with binding arbitration. And I would suggest that if the solution you have received from the state is not satisfactory, that you seek that type of conclusion to your grievance.
Sir?
Yes, sir.
Just one more thing on that, please. This was to be effective from May 3rd, and it was in exchange for other considerations received from the union. And this, sir, was your word. You did give your verbal commitment to Mr. Parr. And I think that means something too, sir. It has to mean something, because everything is based on other people's word, and your word has got to mean something too, sir. And you did give it.
That's true. I indicated that I would settle the grievance in your favor if I received some consideration from Mr. Parr. And the consideration, incidentally, was that Local 71 dispatched two gold panners, which the Department of Highways wanted to hire. As you know, traditionally in the city of Fairbanks, the Department of Highways participates with the community in the hiring of these gold panners. Well, earlier this year, when the Department of Highways hired the gold panners, Local 71 protested that, and the protest resulted in the termination of those gold panners. Granted, that was tied into it. The consideration was never given by Mr. Parr. The gold panners were never dispatched.
Sir, I would like to say that the gold panners were dispatched, and they did go to work, and that Mr. Parr did have to fire these people. I would like you to check into that, sir, because this is the truth.
Well, if the gold panners were dispatched, I'm confident that the arbitrator would rule in your favor.
The gold panners were working, sir, and they did go to work. And this was all done before Mr. Meese checked with the department of the union itself. And this is, yes, there's also something else, sir. Now, this union up here also has people that have been paying their dues for months and months, and they have not gotten out. And I'm not knocking the gold panners. I enjoy them, and I do support them. I go to the games. But still, sir, there's people paying dues that have not gotten out, and these guys got out, and that's not fair. That's just not fair. Can you mention, can you say something to that, sir?
Well,
there are people paying dues now. Can you say something to that, please?
I can't argue the fact that there are people paying dues.
Does that not mean something, sir?
In your case, Mr. Roy, I would suggest that if you feel that the grievance has not been settled to your satisfaction, you do seek an outside arbitrator. It's a very orderly procedure we have established to solve these situations where the parties cannot settle them between themselves.
Okay, sir. I was just wondering because it did seem that you were rather tardy on answering any of the questions that Mr. Parr did give to you in regarding this situation. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you for calling in, Mr. Roy. We have several questions coming in now, but let me repeat that phone number for you. It's 479-7491. And we didn't establish too many ground rules here, but perhaps I could establish a couple of quickies just off the top of my hat. Perhaps we could keep questions on a non-personal basis. I'm not trying to say that anybody's gotten out of hand yet, but if we can keep it non-personal, strictly to business for you folks out there, I think we'd all feel better about it. Mr. Guy.
I ask a question. I'm quite frankly sort of amazed that with several thousand state employees, Andy, that you would know that case or know others. Now, maybe that's a special case, but is it still the case in the state that a commissioner would have that personal touch with a lot of the cases?
Well, this was a grievance, and I probably get, 10 grievances across my desk a week. Some of them demand more personal attention than others. This grievance, as an example, demanded a certain personal attention because it was important to the community. The Department of Highways wanted to hire these people that they traditionally hire. The organization, Local 71, was protesting it, and they wanted some consideration in return for allowing these gold panners to work. Mr. Roy was either fortunately or unfortunately mixed up in it. It does not mean that every time a grievance comes across my desk, I remember the name and the situation. This one I happen to recall. It's unfortunate that it was not resolved in Mr. Roy's favor, but as I indicated, he does have a method for reaching its logical conclusion.
I would like to think it reflects the fact that there aren't that many aggrieved employees.
Actually, when I started, that was my original point. We have probably 10,000 state employees. We have contracts, labor contracts with most of them, and I get maybe, like I said, 10 grievances a week across my desk, which is really a pretty small percentage when you consider the bureaucracy and the number of state employees that we have working for us.
Okay, thank you.
On the ground rules, can I just say one thing? You know, really what we're dealing with a lot of is really people problems, and if people want to call in on these, I don't have any objection. In fact, if I can't answer them the way Andy does, at least it tells me that there's a problem there that I should be aware of. So from that point of view, I think maybe some of the personal questions
may
be
on. Okay, fine. It's up to you folks. We have another telephone call from a Charlie Newell calling from a payphone in Clear, and I'm not sure who it's for yet, but let's find out.
Is it collect?
This is town four, Mr. Newell. Yes, we hear you.
Yes, I had a question for Mr. Gross.
Okay, for Mr. Gross, please repeat it.
I was considering the possibility of gathering information for the average citizen as regards to legal rights, and was thinking perhaps a small pamphlet or a booklet might be possible to print that would give the average citizen a more basic understanding of his basic rights when approached maybe by a police officer under specific given circumstances.
Mr. Newell, we don't hear you too well, but I think I got the question. Let me repeat it to Mr. Gross as closely as I can.
Okay.
Mr. Gross, Mr. Newell is wanting to know what the possibility is of gathering information for an average citizen concerning their legal rights, perhaps a pamphlet or a booklet or something that would give the average citizen a better understanding of their rights in various situations, and I think he mentioned the possibility of arrest and this sort of thing.
There is some of that stuff out. It's not put out by the I'm sorry.
Go ahead. He was just told that he just had his 3 minutes are up.
Put in on the nickel, Mr. Nolte. There is some of that material around. It's not put out by my office. There's, for instance, the Office of Child Advocacy, I think, puts out a book on juvenile rights. Alaska Legal Services puts out a book for people who qualify under Alaska Legal Services. If you happen to have money, you're in trouble. You don't get to know what your rights are. Now, then there are private organizations. I remember the American Civil Liberties Union had put out a pamphlet years ago, not very many years ago, on citizens' rights, in which was included a card. I remember a small card which you could put in your wallet, which advised you of your rights if and when you were arrested. The Department of Law has not done that in the past. It's not a bad idea, frankly. But as I say, there has been something available from other sources. I'd like to think about that a bit. I think that's a pretty good idea.
Can you speak up, Mr. Newell?
Pardon me?
Can you speak up? We can just barely hear you.
Oh, yes. I had just another small question on the topic. I wondered if the state university system was planning to implement a law in school.
I heard the question.
I heard this one, too.
At least as a non-practicing lawyer at the time, I think the question was, in the university planning to start a law school? And the answer, at least from my perspective, is that's been an ongoing debate in the state for years and years, but I don't know of any plan to start a law school now.
In fact, Mr. Gross, John Havelock and, I guess just Mr. Havelock need a study that stated that it probably wouldn't be a feasible thing for Alaska to start?
Yeah, exactly. They've got a criminal justice center which works with the University of Alaska. You get a BA with certain emphasis on criminal justice, but there's no law school yet, and my guess is we don't have a real need for one for years and years to come.
Of course, that's coming from a lawyer, too.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Newell, for calling.
Anytime you have a lawyer determining whether or not we need a law school, I would think that his determination would be somewhat prejudiced by his occupation.
Mm. Now, we have another phone call on another line, if I can find it. This is Town Forum. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay,
Governor Hamm, this is Ron Richards, and I've never had a chance to personally meet you and everything, although I did vote for you. I guess I'll direct my question in just one area. It's not an economic question or anything, but I'm one of the few Alaskans, I guess the real extreme minority, that doesn't go for all the development and really would not like to see it. I was really glad to hear about your decision on the Hall Road. I think that was kind of a halfway between thing of going along with the minorities and the majority of the people that wanted to use the road, the industrial people and all that. However, Freeman's bill on land that got put down this last year, is that I think there's a segment of past Alaskan people that came up here for other than economic reasons that are always being overlooked. You know, we're just concerning ourselves about industrial economic development. And I can bring in the one thing is the open entry land swindles by the realtors. Just prior to the pipeline coming in, when the open entry land was closed off. And now it's my understanding that we've given away more land and set it aside than we have available. So, you know, I'm sure, sir, that you have a segment of Alaska that's secure, that when you first came here and now you, but we have it seems that these minority of people that come here, that even though the frontier is lost, that with all our land and only 500,000 people or even less, that these people should not be overlooked. And I would like to know if you have any plans in the future, not just for agricultural purposes, but for the individual that does want to go out there and in Alaska because of so much land and take a small piece of land and maybe live on it for a couple years or even a year to get to know that part of Alaska. And I don't mean any of these big state land leases where they subdivide land and they sell it off. There is a segment of people, sir, and I know from your campaigning and what kind of a man that I've read you are, that you can understand what I'm talking about. There are people who want to get out there who are not looking. Now, myself, I don't work on a pipeline. I would despise working on a pipeline or joining any kind of union. And, well, do you have any plans in the future of considering these type of Alaskan people that have been here and who may still come yet, young people that we don't know about? Over.
You bet we do. First, let's get one thing straight. When you suggest that you're a very tiny minority who does not subscribe to all-out development, I want to correct that misconception. I think there are large numbers of people who subscribe to that point of view. It's one of the problems confronting any administration in this state. The polls seem to demonstrate that virtually 50-50 cleavage between those who aspire to a great deal more development and those who would prefer to slow things down a bit. But in regard to the acquisition of lands, one of the things that has caused this administration a great deal of concern is precisely how we can convey to the private individual lands to fulfill the type of hunger that you mentioned without opening up to the abuses of past land conveyances that you also mentioned previously. I'm going to bounce the question to Guy Martin, who I instructed some time ago and who, in fact, on his own volition was undertaking an assessment of how we could come forth with a plan which would serve to convey lands to private parties. Guy, it's all yours.
Governor, I think there's two or three things we can mention right away. Number one is that we're attempting right now to put together a new bill, a new program, which will have the effect of making land available in reasonably small parcels to individual Alaskans, hopefully under a system which will not either allow or foster speculation, which I think goes a long way to satisfy the sort of concern that this gentleman has. I might say there's one problem with that I don't think we can address. And that is, as much as many of us would like to try to put together a program like that for people who've been here a long time and have a personal investment in the state, it would probably be unconstitutional to have a durational residency requirement for that land ownership, and that's a built-in problem. Still another thing that we're going to do, and I hope very shortly, is to begin to have some land sales and to change the policy on those sales, perhaps by new regulations, so that we frustrate large buyers who can buy great deals of land at high prices and then speculate on them in favor of people who can buy small tracts and only own one rather than accumulate several of them. So those are just two things, but there's a whole series of things which I hope you're going to be able to announce sometime just before or just after the election on that subject.
Okay, I appreciate, Mr. Martin, your answer to that question, and Governor Hammonds. I'm wondering also, I saw here a while back, and I read quite a while back, about BLM's proposed 40 or so corridors that they plan on crisscrossing the state of Alaska with. Mr. Martin, what is your opinion on that?
Well, my opinion concurs with the governor's position, as you might guess, and he's taken a strong position even before I arrived on the scene here, that we would oppose those 40 corridors, basically on the theory that we would rather see planning and a need demonstration for each corridor before its establishment, rather than simply drawing lines on a map and saying these are where the corridors will be. So that's been our posture up till now, and at the same time we're doing that, we're engaging in a number of activities, including some that others here may want to discuss on the Department of Transportation, that will allow us to actually plan for the corridors that will be best for the state in the future, significantly less than 40, I might say.
Okay, I guess that answers that question. The only thing I'd like to just interject at this point is that I think that possibly the growth philosophy is not always the best philosophy. That can be observed from the lower 48. And that, let's see, what else I was going to add in here. I guess that I just would like real consideration taken of the minority people, and if Fairbanks wants to develop itself and they want to move their development with other pipelines or whatever, you know, the old saying, out of sight, out of mind. Now, I really like the part of the pipe that's under the ground and they've reseeded it, revegetated it, but the part that's sticking out of the ground to me is the biggest eyesore for the state of Alaska, and any gas line that comes in, if they could just put a stipulation in there that as much of the pipe be out of sight, the more aesthetically valuable to the to the Alaskan. That's it. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I might say that virtually all, if not all, of the gas pipeline will be buried. We were looking at the pipeline the other day, and someone suggested we ought to seek an appropriation from National Congress to paint it green. That would be the least we could do, perhaps, to cut down on the glare.
All right, thank you. Now, I think perhaps it's time for another ground rule or two. I must have 25 questions stacked up, and there's one on the line. So I'm going to ask you folks out there watching and listening, if you will please hold your questions to about a minute, and maybe not ask follow-up questions, or we're not going to get through this stack, and there are questions building up for just about everyone. So there's another one here right now. This is Town Forum. May I help you? Are you there now?
Yes.
Push the wrong button. I'm sorry.
Yes, my name is Elizabeth Cook, and I think my question is properly directed to Mr. Motley, if he's there.
Yes, he's here, Ms. Cook.
All right. As we've heard recently, there have been a great deal of difficulties for people with auto insurance in the state because of rising costs and either the inability of people to get insurance or rather dramatic increases in policy rates. And this is personal, but I think it affects a lot of other people. There is also a similar problem with other kinds of casualty insurance, and I'm talking about the inability of people building homes to get what is called builder's risk policies. Now, it's a very sad fact that if the bank lends you money, they want to know that the things that that money buys are being taken care of prior to the time that you get a homeowner's policy. I had the experience last Friday of calling every single insurance firm in this town and inquiring about builder's risks policy, and I got everything from polite answers to very, very rude answers, but the sum and substance of it was no.
Motley, thanks, your turn.
You're right, Mr. Cook. It's not only, as you said, just auto insurance. It's builder's risks policies. It's certain types of casualty and liabilities. We saw the first wave of it, so to speak, last year with a medical malpractice insurance problem.
Yes.
And I think we're on our way, hopefully, to solve that one. The good news is that it's not just Alaska. This time, it's a nationwide. And what's happened basically with the insurance industry nationwide is as they found their profits have diminished because of they spent most of their profits come from investments and not from the money they make from premiums. They have found it necessary to get rid of certain lines that are not profitable. Builders' risks policies, bonding policies, are not profitable. Now, we've been aware of this problem for some time as it's grown over the last 3 or 4 months. In the last session of the legislature, we attempted to take a couple of steps in that direction under Governor Hammond's direction, and that included putting more teeth into the assigned risk pool and a few other technical things where the division of insurance can get a better handle on either providing a better incentive or a better climate for the insurance industry and or making alternate means available. There's no magic solution to the problem, Mrs. Cook. I think all I can tell you is that we're well aware of it, and I think we're on the front end of solving it ahead of many of our sister states, and I think that the medical malpractice one, for instance, would be a good example.
Well, the only thing you said, you hoped you didn't want any ancillary questions, but the only thing that might help right now are all of those people like ourselves who are in the middle of building a house, and it isn't going to be the bank. They're really good guys, but what it's going to be is the bank examiners that say no, and in fact go back and recover the money that you have lent. And so that leaves us, as one man said the other day, up a creek with no paddle whatsoever.
What I'd suggest, Ms. Cook, is that if you would like to call my office tomorrow with the specifics on your builder's risk policy, we get several of these calls, and we're not in the business of trying to place insurance, believe me, but we're there to try to help people. And if you'd like to call tomorrow with the specifics, we'll see what we can do, because we've been able to help a couple of other people out.
Okay, you'll be at the new state building then?
Well, I'll be back in Juneau in the afternoon. We're leaving early in the morning, but if you could call down, or call the veterans office here and give them the particulars, and they can call it down to me.
Okay, thank you very much, Mrs. Cook.
Thank you.
Mr. Motley.
We may be leaving right after this program.
Okay, we have several more questions stacked up here. I've got 4 or 5 for our Attorney General. Mr. Gross,
right. Is
no plea bargaining allowing too many criminals to fall between the cracks?
I hope not. It depends on what you mean by falling through the cracks. You know, years ago, when they had plea bargaining, it was all kind of a little cozy system. You'd arrest somebody for assault with a deadly weapon, and there wasn't much of a case, and you couldn't prove it. but neither the police nor the prosecutor wanted to do nothing. So what they'd do is they'd go to the defense counsel and they'd say, look, we got to plead this guy out. How are we going to do it? And the defense counsel would say, okay, I'll tell you what to do. If you reduce this to a simple assault, which is a misdemeanor, and give him a suspended imposition of sentence so it comes off his record in 6 months, you can get a statistic, a conviction. Now, maybe that's not what you would call falling through the cracks. To me, that's a meaningless exercise. That's a waste of state money, a waste of state police time, a waste of prosecutors' time, and a waste of the court's time. What we're doing now with no plea bargaining is we're insisting, since these cases have to be tried, that they be better cases. Now, that means if you can't prove something, you can't charge somebody with it. That's for sure. That's the way our criminal justice system works. If there's no evidence, you can't convict somebody. But at the same time, when we take a case in and we know that it might have to go to trial, the police are making better cases for us. They know it has to go to trial. The DAs are working harder. They're making better cases. And I think the conviction rate is way up. And it's true. There are some cases that aren't going that used to go. But as I said, those cases are the ones that ended in meaningless statistics, so far as I'm concerned, and did nobody any good. So I think we've got a more meaningful process now.
Av, while you're talking, do you mind answering one about consumer law? What does a citizen with a consumer complaint do when the Fairbanks Attorney General's office refuses to take the complaint because it is an individual complaint? That's the way the question was stated. An individual is underlined here, if that helps you.
I'm a little unclear. The person isn't on the phone, so I can't ask them back. But what they mean by that, I'll tell you one thing they can do. If they feel that they have not gotten adequate service from the Fairbanks Attorney General's office, they can write me directly in Juneau. And if there's any way that, you know, that I feel that they haven't received the kind of treatment under the law that they should have, I can assure you I'll be on the phone to the Consumer Protection Division here in Fairbanks. I haven't hesitated to do that in the past when people have written me. And as I say, if you don't get satisfaction, don't hesitate to make your complaints known. I'm a little unsure as to what you mean specifically by this, but if I can help, I'll try.
Okay, thank you, Adam. Governor Hammond, there's another question that's directed to you. Is there anything being done for local, that's Alaska, local use of the North Slope gas? All three proposals provide for out-of-state use.
Well, as a matter of fact, there's a great deal being done insofar as investigating the potentials for such usage. We're fortunate in having in Guy Martin, the chairman of the Oil and Gas Royalty Board, who has dealt specifically with these uses, and I'd bounce the question off of Guy.
I think it's very important to say to this listener that the contracts are not, as indicated in the answer, one of the primary conditions of the contracts is that we have the right to take that gas back at some later time if we need it. So that even though the contracts are made to help get support for the Trans-Alaska Gas Line route, we're in no way losing control of that gas for the future. So that we may be selling it and gaining support, but we have the right to use it later. And at the same time, we're doing, as the governor suggested, we're doing a pretty comprehensive study of what kinds of uses are most beneficial for the state. So I would only say just briefly now that don't be concerned that we're selling it and it'll go outside. We're doing everything we can to save it for future use here.
Okay, thank you, Guy. We're already getting the question stacked up, but please keep calling. We've got a long time on the air tonight, and that number is 479-7491. And I would appreciate the people writing these questions in the office here to write a little more clearly, if you don't mind out there, okay? I'm having trouble reading them. This concerns the Hall Road, Governor. I'll just read the question and let you decide if you want to answer it or someone else. Have you researched how much it would cost to charge tariffs of $1.05 or so per mile on the road? This would price trucks out of the market. Hercs would be cheaper. What about charging per weight rather than distance?
Well, there's nothing absolutely assured as to just how those user fees will be applied. We are, of course, not going to assume control of the road for at least a year. During the interim period, we're going to be assessing the most appropriate means of applying such fees and consulting with the users to make that determination. So all of those proposals will be evaluated.
Here's a congratulatory message. Want to throw that one in? This says, congratulate the highway department on the new airport road, but when will the lights be coordinated? There's another part of the question here. When will east side of the airport be completed as far as paving is concerned? The loose gravel is damaging the props of small airplanes. Who wants to take that one on? I'm not sure.
Well, Commissioner Skugel, where are you?
Do they have a name for that?
Have a name, or at least if the listener would convey to us that question directly, if you want to make note that I remarked on this program that I wanted to have that conveyed to me, we'll get an answer to you. I can't answer it off the top of my head.
And perhaps
the caller could probably call the airport here, Fairbanks International, and call the airport manager and get an answer to that.
Governor Hammond, what do you think of the Alaska National Guard, and is it functioning here? You read that one over my shoulder.
Is it functioning here? Well, the Alaska National Guard, the contacts I have had with them under General McCrassen have been most impressive. I was in Bethel, for example, the night the power plant burned up, and the response of the Guard and the immediate attention to that problem, the handling of the what could be a catastrophic situation, convinced me that the Guard certainly merited their pay and prominence, and I was determined to do what I can to make that even more viable organization. I'm very pleased with the programs that have been undertaken under General McCrashen's leadership, the indoctrination into the Guard of many female Guards persons out in the rural areas, I think, is a monumental step forward, very well received and very impressive, the contribution those women are making. I'm not sure exactly what the questioner means in regard to is it functioning here, but I would certainly assume so, and if the listener feels it is not, I'd like to be apprised of it.
Okay, Governor, we have another live call here from a Sam Dementoff. Yes, sir, this is Town Forum.
Yeah, this is Sam Dementoff.
Could you speak up a little, please, Mr. Dementoff?
Yes, this is Sam Dementoff. I'm from Holy Cross, and I wanted to ask one question concerning native allotments. And what I'd like to say is that in the past, native people, and I've traveled throughout the interior pretty extensively lately, and the native people in the past did not have to mark out lands or you make any signs or anything like that. And what I'd like to point out is now that the Land Claims Act has passed, and before that in 31st 1971 that the Allotment Act ended, the people had to make their wants known as far as land that they were able to get. And now I went down to Holy Cross, which where I'm from originally, and a lot of the people down there are actually bickering at each other because they've actually had to go out to their fish camps and post land that they claim as theirs under the Allotment Act. And in the past, there was actually no need for a person to go out to the fish camp and say that this is my fish camp and that you anybody else that's close to me to stay away. Now they're having to go out there to their lands.
It's one of the first blessings of progress and development. Once there is a conveyance of title to private parties, be they native corporations or individuals, there's an obligation to identify parcels of land within those conveyances. And of course, the Native Allotment Program is a federal program. It is not a state program, but I know exactly what you're talking about, Sam, and I lament the fact that we're suddenly faced with rules and regulations and paperwork that we were mercifully spared some short years ago. Maybe Guy Martin would have something to add in that regard, but it is a federal program, and while I feel for you, I can't quite reach you from here, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you, Governor. We have a Mr. Gordon Fox on the other line. Mr. Fox, you're on Town Forum.
Hi, thank you. I had a couple of questions for Governor Hammond or whoever.
Can you make one question, please? We have a lot of people waiting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Regarding fishing, like many thousands of other Alaskans, I'm wondering, in this area, there are real no boat launching facilities, as far as permanent launching facilities other than Quartz Lake that I'm aware of. And I was wondering if the state had any proposals or were planning to build any type of boat launching facilities for any of the lakes that are recreational type of areas.
Well, I would have to consult with the Commissioner of Highways to determine whether that's the case. Perhaps your local municipal entity would have some idea. I would assume that they would convey to the state local desires in that regard, but I don't know the particulars.
This would be actually in the outside of the borough area, in the, let's say, Harding Lake and Birch Lake and these type of areas.
Okay, thank you for calling, Mr. Fox. Andy Warwick, you're on the tap next here, from Mr. Dale Durwachter. A contributing member of Teachers Retirement asks if the Alaska Teachers Retirement System isn't headed for a financial dilemma not unlike the federal Social Security system due to excessive benefits.
Well, the answer is no. Both the Teachers Retirement System and the Public Employees Retirement System are funded not at 100% of their liability, but a substantial portion of their liability. Part of the problem is each year, or when the legislature passes increased benefits, it makes those benefits retroactive to the people that have already retired. And when you do that, you either come up with a large sum of money to cover the costs, or you prorate it over the ensuing years. And what we've been doing lately, and according to the statutes, is we amortize that unfunded liability over the next 20 or 30 years. And because of that, on paper, our retirement systems appear to be not totally funded. However, I would like to say that comparing them to the Social Security system, there just is no comparison.
Great. Thank you very much, Andy. We have another phone call from Mr. Harvey Smith. Mr. Smith, you're on Town Forum.
Sir, this is Hardy Smith, big game guy, North Pole, Alaska. I came to Alaska in 52, flew up from Florida, liked the state, and stayed most of the time since. I've guided people most of this time. I've seen our big game and small game literally wiped out, decimated, while our $40,000 a year state supervisors were striking for higher pay last summer. Our game was being shot out of the Colwell River. Winter before last, one fella told me he took out 18 moose. I think that perhaps Jim Brooks should be given the authority to hire and fire our local $40,000 a year supervisors who are not controlling this big game for high sustained yield.
I think maybe this is your question, Governor.
Well, of course, Jim Brooks does have the authority to hire and fire a $40,000 a year supervisor if it be concluded that it is his fault that those type of deplorable actions were occurring. The public safety capability and the personnel enforcing fish and game regulations were not, to my understanding, at all on strike, but I would bounce that off of Dick Burton, Commissioner of Public Safety.
Well, this is the first I've heard of this particular incident, but you're talking about the public safety capabilities. I'm sure if Mr. Smith's been here as long as he has, as he says, and has been involved in the guiding business, he probably, as most guides do, know the capability of my enforcement branch of Fish and Wildlife better than I do, as most guides are pretty much in the field a lot more than I am. The problem, of course, is resources, which I've discussed with you and we're addressing in the coming budget for manpower to be able to try to cover the state as vast as it is. It's not an excuse, but it's the truth that there's only about 75 fish and wildlife officers to cover the entire state, and it's come to our attention with the increased population and the pressure that it's just not going to hold up, and we're going to do something about it in the future. I would suggest that Mr. Smith, being a professional guide or anyone else, that they can certainly get my phone number or call me if he knows of a case like he's mentioned, with 18 moose being taken out by one person. I'd be happy to use him as a witness and proceed with prosecution.
Governor, there's one thing I'd like to add on that. There seemed to be an inference that during the strike, the Fish and Game Protection Officers participated in it. To my knowledge, they did not. Both your Fish and Game Protection Officers and your public safety people, by law, cannot strike. And to my knowledge, none of them did participate in the strike.
That's right.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Governor Hammond, do you intend to fill the vacancies on the licensing board for psychologists soon? And that's signed Ken Martin.
Well, frankly, I'm not aware of how many vacancies there are. However, one of my staff is assigned almost well, if not full-time, a substantial portion of their time to doing precisely that. I'm sure that names have been conveyed to us for consideration, and we have acted as expeditiously as possible in filling all vacancies. I might point out that I've had literally, I believe, thousands to fill, not merely hundreds, but thousands in the wake of the disclosure bill and the resignations of multitudes of state appointees. But
Governor,
that, we'll take a look at that. Yes, Tony, I would appreciate your comment.
Was it psychologist board?
Psychologist board.
That and 21 other boards rested my department, and one of the problems, of course, is perennial filling of the positions. But now that you've raised the subject, we can possibly put in a good plug for one of the bills that the governor introduced last year, and that was to place laymen or consumers on many of these occupational boards. And under the governor's direction, we've gone out asking for volunteers of 8 different boards, including the psychologist. And if there are people out there that are not connected with that specific occupation, would like to serve as a consumer, we'd be most than happy to entertain such an act.
You know, Tony,
Dad, I got a question, a chance to answer that, Governor.
You know how many vacancies there are on the board?
Not on that one board, Governor. I don't know.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. We have about 30 questions stacked up, so let me try a few more on the governor. If the city government won't commit themselves to increasing a police force, what can citizens do?
Well, I would certainly think they would petition their local government entity and or the police force with perhaps precisely that, a petition. Make their views known en masse, and I'm sure there'd be a response on the part of the city fathers and the police force.
Here's another one, a little bit different, from Grant Darrow, Star Root. Last year, $250,000, and there's a question mark there, was appropriated to study wind energy. What has happened to that?
Tony, we are in the process of placing in your shop the program the listener is speaking of. There are 3, I believe, pilot projects that are going to be funded by IRTA money. Going in one, I believe, at Nelson Lagoon, one at Coal Bay, and I'm not sure, perhaps Kotzebue, the third one. They are being pursued and will be evaluated, and you'll hear much more about them in the future. I'm very excited about potentials for wind generation, particularly in rural areas, and we're looking into that post-haste.
Let's talk about money a little bit more here. This viewer is interested in knowing what is coming of the state sale of royalty gas and oil. Will the state get our share of the oil and gas, before it leaves the state?
Again, the chairman of the Royalty Board appropriately would respond to that. Commissioner Martin?
Governor, I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Yes, Guy. What is coming of state sale of royalty gas and oil? Will the state get our share of the oil and gas before it leaves the state?
Okay, I was trying to see if that was different from the question that was asked before. Basically, we're now pursuing the question of whether or not we can make a sale of royalty gas to see if we can help buy some influence to support our position on the gas pipeline route. At the same time we're doing that, we're looking at possibilities for in-state use. We will make no sale of that gas to help us in the pipeline fight that will avoid our ability, or that will void our ability to use it later. With regard to both royalty oil and royalty gas, we've made nationwide solicitations to see if we could find people who would like to buy that royalty oil or gas and use it for constructive purposes in Alaska. Now, you could talk a long time about the many offers that have come in, but let me just list a very few just to give you an idea of what's happened. And I want to emphasize, thus far we don't feel that we've even scratched the surface. We have an offer to buy royalty gas to construct, as I discussed earlier, a fertilizer plant to serve Alaskan agriculture. We have a couple of proposals to add to the supply of oil for the North Pole refinery. We have a proposal to add to the Tesoro refinery. We have a proposal for petrochemical facilities in the state. And we have a proposal for a refinery to be located at Tidewater. And the question we have to answer is which of these things are really in our state interest, and among them, which represents our best choice. We don't have an infinite amount of this royalty oil and gas, and so our choice is fairly important. But I think it's safe to say that it's probably one of the top 2 or 3 priorities that I work on from day to day and week to week.
We seem to have several questions here concerning land. Let me try a couple of these. If it is true that Native corporations have claimed the land between Stevens Village and the Hall Road Bridge, will there be an easement or corridor for people who want to hunt or fish there? Governor?
Well, that specific parcel, I'm not I know where it is. I'm not familiar with its current status, but the Interior Department has issued regulations providing for the conveyance or the retention of corridors in land conveyances. Now, whether or not that area contains those types of easements, I'm not sure, but Commissioner Martin perhaps knows something about it.
I don't know the area either, except to say that there's a program to identify recreational easements, and there's a program to identify utility and transportation corridors. And I would think that if that one's one that's been in use and is currently being used, it'll probably be identified. Again, here's one where if the caller can send a letter to me, we're soliciting information like that, both on the recreational and utility and transportation corridors. And what we need more than anything is input from Alaskan citizens where areas are in need of protection.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Martin. Well, we've got all kinds of questions here. It's becoming more difficult in trying to decide which ones to ask next. But please keep calling in and we'll get to all we can. The number is 479-7491. Commissioner Mueller, why doesn't the DEC enforce the regulations that apply to the Fairbanks North Scarborough dump?
Well,
that's when you're beating your wife.
Yes, that's kind of like, right. I don't know what specific phase of the regulations the caller is referring to. The Fairbanks North Scarborough dump has been a bone of contention for a number of years. In fact, when I was in Fairbanks, I was on a committee to study the problem. And in fact, we found out in some cases that there wasn't a water pollution problem from the dump. In terms of the long term, the borough and our department are closely looking at alternative landfill sites, and I think we've got some landfill sites that will become available when the Trans-Alaska pipeline is completed in construction, and utilize those for replacing the existing facility. The primary problem with the dump right now is the fact of is a lack of proper landfill material. It's very expensive in this area to use gravel to cover the landfill, and the fact that it's so close to the river that we do get inundation of the landfill cells with water. So it's a long-term problem. It flares up from time to time, and I think the next couple of years we'll be able to solve it by relocating the dump.
You haven't had complaints filed specifically with your shop, though, insofar as violations of regulations, Ernie?
Not specifically.
I would hope that the listener would convey them to you if
yes,
they have some.
Yes, I might mention that, we would appreciate a lot more if people who have specific complaints would call our office in Fairbanks that handles all these matters, and our telephone number in Fairbanks is 452-1714.
Ernie, isn't there a garbage dump somewhere in some locale in the state located close to an airport and has seagull problems, so they're being forced to shoot the seagulls? Didn't I read about that not too long ago?
Well, the FAA keeps complaining about the fact that every time Anchorage builds a runway, they put another dump at the end, and that causes seagulls and they have problems like that. I hope the new north-south runway doesn't have that problem.
Okay, gentlemen, we have another phone call from Richard Redburn. Question on taxes, and Mr. Redburn's calling from Eielson Air Force Base. This is Town Forum, Mr. Redburn.
Yes, sir. I would like to know, with all the revenues coming from the gas line, the oil pipeline, how come the state income taxes haven't gone down?
Well, unfortunately, the very easy answer to that, we are borrowing $200 million a year, roughly, on future revenues. We're not, by any means, securing enough revenue to pay for current programs out of current revenues. We're having to borrow on the future through the so-called tax on oil reserves, which is simply a method of translating revenues from the future into the present. So until or unless such time that we are in fact acquiring enough money through ongoing revenue resource means to reduce income taxes, I'm sorry, it's not likely it's going to occur.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Governor, as long as you're talking, here's another one from Roger Huntington in Galena that was called in. Will the state retain responsibility for maintenance of roads constructed with state funds, such as those constructed under the local trails and service roads?
Well, roads other than those constructed under local service roads and trail program are, of course, a state maintenance obligation, which is assumed by the state. Those, however, funded through that program, I believe, are recipients of revenue sharing to the tune of, I'm not sure now, I'm going to bounce it off Lee McInerney, is it $1,500 a mile still?
It is, and $900 for ice roads.
900 a mile for a proven ice road.
And once they're constructed, it's the local government's option or obligation to maintain, but we convey to them funds to do so. Is that
on the ice roads? Yes, on the other roads also.
Right.
We only pay for roads they maintain within the local government.
Mm-hmm.
Here's not a question, but a statement. Someone called in says a little follow-up for the governor. Jim Johnson says he's a member of the Alaska National Guard here in Fairbanks, and it's functioning very well.
Thank you, Jim. I'm pleased to hear that.
Okay, Attorney General Gross, what has happened to the court case on Cook Inlet Land Exchange? And it says here in parentheses, the Beluga Coal Field.
It was argued in the Superior Court in Anchorage, and Judge Acapeni ruled...